Hi, I'm Darina, co-founder of OpenPhone. My dad is a business owner, and growing up, he always kept his ringtone super loud so he'd never miss a customer call. OpenPhone gives your team business phone numbers to call and text all in one shared workspace, and our AI agent answers 24/7 so you never miss a customer. Over 60,000 businesses use OpenPhone. Get 20% off at openphone.com/odyssey. OpenPhone. No missed calls, no missed customers.
Coming off that frustrating loss, game one of the series, then the washout. Heading into game two, then the doubleheader. Unplanned, and the Orioles sweep. They were stymied for most of the game by David Peterson. Then Ryan Stanek said, hey, Orioles, you want to win? Want to even this thing up? Yeah, sure. Gunnar Henderson hits one on the flat court. Orioles attack one on. Mountain got the save. Second game, Sagano got his first win in over a month. Had some shaky stretches early. Retired 9 in a row. Shaky again, but stabilized. Got run support. Jordan Westberg, he goes deep. So the Orioles sweep the series. Now the Marlins come to town. Identical records. 42-50. And here's another one. Orioles 21-23 at home. Marlins 22-23 on the road. So a lot of similarities here between the two teams. Miami's run differential is minus 68. Orioles minus 77, which usually means you're a bad team in most years. Not the end-all, be-all, but a pretty strong indicator of where you are. For instance, in the AL Central, the only team with a positive run differential is the Tigers, and they happen to be 13 games up in the division. So the Orioles and Marlins trying to tighten that up just a little bit. As we said earlier, Miami had won 11 straight on the road until they dropped two straight against the Cincinnati Reds. But Nolan McGraw, and we were talking about this in the opening of the program here on The Fan, featured artist Friday, Eric Clapton, that, you've been there back since the 6-game winning streak, and then it was, 9 of 11 or something like that. I mean, made it interesting. Then they started losing series again. Some of them of the disappointing loss variety. They couldn't close out in these rubber matches. Blew an 8-0 lead in Tampa. The debacle a couple of nights ago with Baker. Now in Tampa, he had a rough night last night against the Red Sox. But I'm feeling better about the team today than I was when they were putting together that 6-game winning streak so many weeks ago.
That's interesting, because I was actually just sitting here thinking when you brought it up again that that was real emotions when I said they were back after the 6-game win streak. I thought it was real at that point.
Yeah.
And maybe now I'm just jaded because of what happened, but I'm not as confident now as I was then. Is it the injury? Is it the fact that they're getting guys back healthier? What is it that makes this more appealing or stronger?
I think they're healthier offensively. I mean, Kowser, Holiday, who's having a really good year. Westberg being back. I've said it before. He's the guy. Gunner's the best player on the team. And even though the analytics say that he's not all that great defensively at shortstop, he seems to have tightened up on the errant throws, which could be detrimental to the team. Morton Dielen, I'm still a fan of Man Bun. I mean, he's not Jim Palmer, but who is? But he's capable, and I think he'll be capable tonight. I just think there's a different juice around this team. They've got a winning record since Manzolino took over, 27-22, as Ryan Ripken has said, and we'll talk to him in a second. Win your home games and then, see what you could do away from Oriole Park at Camden Yards. I just see a different juice to the team. Unfortunately, it's a too little too late scenario.
Right. And that's kind of where I was at, earlier saying if any of the players were maybe rubbed the wrong way or would be, I'm not saying this is a fact, but if the team ended up selling, but they still had a chance to compete and guys might be rubbed the wrong way by it, well, you don't have anyone to blame but yourselves. You put yourselves in the situation. We were talking about, how does this happen with the little things, the base running, the fielding errors? That's the stuff that puts you in such a deficit that you were in. You start to turn the stuff around, you have a good 10 days. Well, 10 days is great, but how does that compare to a bad 20-day stretch that you had earlier in the season? It makes half a dent. So that's where I'm at. It's good in the short term. It's fun. It makes watching the games a hell of a lot easier. But other than that, you can't really make any sweeping statements.
Ryan Ripken is here, ripping it with Ryan. Ryan, what's happening?
Hey, lots happening here, right? Yeah. I'm jumping into a conversation of, is it too little, too late? Is what's happening? Well, a guy I just talked to, he thinks it's not a little bit too late. I talked to Ryan O'Hearn literally just a few minutes ago. And so we're going to tease some of those clips throughout the show, if that's okay with you, Bob.
Hey, man, it's your world, baby. I'm just living in it. I'm nailing it.
I know it's ripping it with Ryan, but it's ripping it with Bob Haney as well. But to this whole conversation, right, we understand that historically the Orioles are going to have to do something special down the stretch here. But when you're looking at it, it's not out of the realm of possibilities if you continue to stack series wins, right? They sit 6.5 games out at the moment from a wild card spot. After a deflating game one loss against the Mets, you win 2 in a row. There is some hope, but I heard you guys say about this, and I don't blame what the front office thinks they have to do moving forward, because you have to identify what your value is and what value you can get. Brian Baker, value-wise, they weren't trying to shop him. But when you get given almost a first-round pick, you know, and Bob, maybe Nolan, I don't know who wants to chime in on this. If I had told you this earlier, even earlier this year or last year, that you could trade Brian Baker for the 37th overall pick, would you have thought I was nuts?
I would have thought you're insane. Uh-huh. And we can just go back to mid-February, early March. We didn't even know if he was going to come north with the team. And then Kittredge got hurt.
Yep.
Then he was dealing Baker to his credit. Yeah, 37th compensatory pick or competitive balance, excuse me, for Brian Baker, a guy that kind of took off the scrap heap 3 years ago. I think they maximized everything you can get from him. But what Nolan brought up earlier, Ryan, was say they sweep the Marlins, then they come back from the break, handle their business against the Rays. They move to within, say, 4 of the wild card.
Mm-hmm.
But Elias is still soldiering forward with trading the O'Hearns, trading the Mullinses. What kind of damage could that do inside that clubhouse?
I think it would definitely frustrate them. And to the point, I heard you, Nolan, just say about they have no one to blame but themselves. It's not even for me with the players. This is an organizational situation that the Orioles have put themselves in. I want to like point that out here, right? Because if you're saying, well, the players are the ones that got to go out there and play, I agree. They have to go out there and play better. There are injuries. That's a part of it. But then fundamentally, organizationally, they haven't been fundamentally sound. They were a top 5 defensive team in 2023 when they won 100-plus games. They're towards the bottom of the barrel defensively. Situational hitting, they're not doing their part. One-run games, and yes, that can be on players, but that's also the fundamentals of what you're teaching in the organization. Factor that in that some of the offseason signings have and have not worked out. Baltimore's in this position collectively together, but I'm looking at the teams in front of them. I think that the Orioles' nucleus that they have, Bob, is more talented. The question is, can that be enough for them to get back in to make the wild card spot?
Thought I had my mic on. I was just hanging out.
Hey, I saw your lips were moving.
Yeah. No, that's how it usually goes anyway. I feel like it's just been a week by week thing with this team. And when they had the 6-game win streak, it felt real, or it felt like, oh, this could be the start of something. And then it quickly goes away. So when a 10-game stretch, like they won 7 of the last 10, great. When that happened last year, we're celebrating. We're beating our chest. This is it. They're taking off. This is what they do. This is this team. Well, 7 out of 10 here in July of 2025. It's great, but it doesn't erase what happened earlier this year. You have to adjust perspective at that point. So, again, I don't know how the team would feel if they ended up selling. We keep making the Tigers comparison. That was their reality last year. I just think for this team, playoffs are such a long shot. It's not impossible, but it is such a long shot that I think the guys, even the team, would have to be realistic about that.
Let's go back to 22 before you hit the break, when Mancini was traded.
Mm-hmm.
Lopi, mm-hmm. who was an all-star that year, was traded. And you got Cano, you got Povich, and I think Seth Johnson was part of that in a roundabout way now up in Philadelphia. And if memory serves, I don't have the exact quote. I apologize. Mike Elias basically said, we're not contending this year. And the team had just started to play better.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a day in August, Ryan and Nolan, and audience, where they were in Tampa, where if the playoffs had started that day, late August, they would have been a wild card team. And then D.L. Hall started, and then you know, they kind of flatlined a little bit after that. So, yeah, I mean, maybe did it disrupt? Did the players get offended by Elias even saying, we're not good enough yet? Then it became liftoff a couple months later. But yeah, I think there could be a disruption of things. And what about Tony Manziello, the skipper? I mean, the more they win, the better are his chances are of keeping that job full time, I would think.
For sure. You win, you're going to get more opportunities. You win earlier on the season, we're not even having these discussions right now. But when it comes to this deadline, and because there's an extra wild card spot in this format that has been adjusted here over the years, there are a lot of teams that think that they can go out and get a player or players that can make the difference. So it is a seller's market. The sellers can really make out with it. Now, like we saw last year, the Padres just said, screw it. We're trading away all of our prospects. But they had to give up a lot. Now, the one thing you got to figure out at some point, prospects are not always going to pan out. And guys that you have to decide, do you want them with you long term or not? And you said Manzo a second ago, Manzo's comments yesterday, 2025, we still want to win, but we're also trying to win in 2026. So whatever you're doing, these moves still have to help you almost immediately, or this trade deadline really isn't going to be worth it.
Ripping it with Ryan. Ryan Ripken, Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw. You want to get in? You can at 410-583-1057. Orioles swept the Mets before the doubleheader. The Orioles were toast. Now they're still alive. Where do you feel? How do you feel about your Birds heading into this series against Miami, which is not going to be a pushover team by any stretch of the imagination? 6.5 out of the wild card. Where do they have to be for Mike Elias to change his mind? And I'm guessing, based on the Baker trade, his mind right now is in sell.
Hi, I'm Darina, co-founder of OpenPhone. My dad is a business owner, and growing up, he always kept his ringtone super loud so he'd never miss a customer call. OpenPhone gives your team business phone numbers to call and text all in one shared workspace. And our AI agent answers 24/7, so you never miss a customer. Over 60,000 businesses use OpenPhone. Get 20% off at openphone.com/odyssey. OpenPhone. No missed calls, no missed customers.
Full mode. Talking about the series coming up against the Marlins. Mike Elias's possible moves 3 weeks from now with the trade deadline looming. And then we'll buy or sell some stuff as well. Hopefully we have some weekend money. But Ryan, the people want to get in, and let's get out to the phones. 410-583-1057 takes us to Kevin in Ellicott City. Kevin, thanks for holding. How are you feeling today?
Doing great, Bob. It's Friday. We're still in summertime, and things are good. Thank you. I hope you're having a great day yourself.
I'm hanging in there, my man. Thank you.
So a little bit to back to a few segments ago, I just wanted to share that maybe money's not everything, but it is something in the world of baseball. And a couple quick things real quick. In 23 and 24, the Texas Rangers were $237 million, bumped up $29 million to $268 in 24. The Baltimore Orioles in 23 and 24, $70.9, $92 million, difference of $22 million. There's a big difference in those teams. In my humble opinion, that's where we very rarely stand a chance making it to where we want to get to.
Sorry, I hold on for a second.
Spending some dough here.
Yeah.
Jumping up that salary.
There was something I saw that I want to talk about with the spending part. And I actually went on a little bit of a rant the other day about the spending part with salary cap and everything. Because did you see that recent that article out there from might have been Robert? Is the Athletic, okay? And on the Athletic, they said that if you have a salary cap that's good for baseball and all this, it's going to help teams spend. One thing I want to point out with spending money, I know the similarities. You spend top 10 in the league, you usually win, right? That's like the the quota right for it? If I'm That's give or take,
not guarantees things, but keeps you in the ballpark. Pun intended.
Right. So I think when you're looking at how money needs to be spent, I think two ways you have to look at it. One, do you want to create a culture around the players that you're keeping here? And two, are there guys that truly want to be here? That, and Baltimore's in that case, because I think it's going to be very hard, Bob, for them to sign and spend money elsewhere out there in the open, right? Because I don't know if, one, it's going to be work out in the favor of the team and the contract, right? But two, I don't know if they want to necessarily come to Baltimore all the time. I know people hate saying that. Well, if you spend the money, they will come. It's not the case all the time, and it doesn't mean it's money well spent. Tampa Bay is the one team that we just saw. You know why they traded for Brian Baker? Is because they said they evaluated a guy that fit their system, 3 years of control, and their system, they've been consistent. They've had the third most wins in baseball over the last 15 years. And they go, well, Ryan, well, they don't have championships. They have the same amount of World Series appearances as the New York Yankees, who spent all this money. The Los Angeles Dodgers, up until 2020 when they won the World Series, they said, well, they just win games, but it's not good enough. Well, they've been spending money for decades. And so I think for the Orioles and spending, you have to be very careful of who you spend the money on. And we're looking at recent deals. Max Fried was the big one, right, Bob?
Yep.
What about Blake Snell?
Trying to come back from an injury.
Right? Corbin Burns.
Out for probably a year and a half.
I want to take it a step further here.
Who the Orioles did try to re-sign, by the way.
They did. How about taking another step forward? Former Oriole, went to Boston. Eduardo Rodriguez signed that free agent deal. Tigers, then the Diamondbacks. Injured quite a bit.
Eduardo.
So I think for the Orioles, the best case for me when you're talking about spending money, and I bring up this case because it's recency biased because I just talked to him. And I'm sorry, Kevin. The money side, I guess maybe I want to pose this question. If you know a guy who's a talented player that wants to be in Baltimore, but maybe isn't, there's a chance you can get this big profile guy out in the open, or you keep a guy that wants to be here and it's a little bit cheaper, but he's not as good. What interests you more?
Well, Anthony Santander's name comes to mind, who probably would have stayed for a fair offer. I said 3 for $60 last February. Got the big money in Toronto. Now, what, shoulder separated or whatever it is, he's dealing. They give Tyler O'Neill a zany contract with all sorts of crazy language in it. But to your point, I'd prefer someone that wants to be here but is good at baseball. You know, if they gave me $60 million, I'd play. I'd suck.
Don't probably, we all want that?
You'd probably get hurt running up the first base.
But the reason why, and I didn't articulate this well a second ago, the salary cap conversation that I wanted to explain, because what's the biggest problem in baseball when it comes to signing guys early is the worry that they are going to want so much money and it's not going to pan out later. And if you have so much team control over a guy, why do you pay them early? Brian Baker is going to the Rays. He's going to be 34 when he's a free agent. Cedric Mullins is going to be a free agent at 31. If there was a salary cap, you would have to remove the arb years, right? Allow guys to get extended earlier, and I think that teams would do that. But that's a whole different landscape. But sure, how things are, the money side for Baltimore, I think that they're going to spend, but it's about spending on guys that really can fit what you want to do, and it's going to be hard to replicate what other teams can because, let's just face it, the Orioles are not going to spend like some of their other rivals like the Red Sox or Yankees.
We have time to get a call?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's go to Jim in Mount Vernon. Jim, thanks for holding your own with Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken, and Nolan McGraw.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, Jim.
All right, look, I'm going to make just a few things that I've been listening to on the morning show, your show, and what I've been hearing is that we have so many teams to jump over and that mathematically that we can't get back into it. Well, I'm looking at the schedule, and I mean, somebody help me out here, because every team except for Minnesota, of course, we got swept by them. We've got four against Cleveland, who's ahead of us, all right? And basically what I'm seeing is on everything, Texas, all right, we're done with them. Kansas City, we're done with them. Seattle, we still got four with them, right? Three or four with them. Boston, Tampa Bay, and New York, if the playoffs were to start today, all four teams out of our division would be in the playoffs today. Well, all those teams, we still have to play a numerous amount of games, and everybody's talking about we have to jump over all these teams. No, we just have to win ball games, and that's all I have to say, and I want to hear what y'all have to say. Thank y'all. Have a good day.
There's Jim and Mount Vernon bringing the positivity.
I love that.
If the Orioles handle their own business, duh, everything will take care of itself because teams will start to fall by the wayside. But when you're sitting here 8 games below .500, first time they've been 8 games below .500, by the way, in 2 months, they haven't been doing a lot of handling of the business.
Yeah, here's the pros. The pros are you are going to face a lot of teams that you're trying to play catch up to. That's the pro. The con. You're facing a lot of really good teams down the stretch. Can I say a few of these teams to get the point across?
Yeah, let's
you're
going
to open after the Marlins, and you're going to go to the break, and then you're going to go come back, and you're going to go down to Tampa Bay and play the Rays at Steinbrenner Field for a set. Then you're going to Cleveland for four, which that Cleveland team has given them fits over the years that they're trying to find their way, but I'm not sleeping on them. Okay, then you get the Rockies. Okay, cool. But then how about the Cubs, the Phillies, both on the road, Seattle, Houston, Boston, Houston, Boston, San Francisco, San Diego, L.A., and then you finally get Pittsburgh, who's on well below 500, on Tuesday, September 9th. So look, I am with it that this is, you want to face the teams that are in front of you. But the reason why people are saying, well, hey, it's going to be hard. Why? It's really good competition. And these are teams that are just like the Orioles have playoff aspirations and World Series aspirations. And if you can beat those teams, then the Orioles, they're gonna be in the playoffs. It's gonna be hard to win 65% of the games down the stretch.
I think Ryan Ripken just detonated a truth bomb when it comes to the Orioles' second half schedule. We'll come back. Jacob Calvin Meyer, Baltimore's son. Then we got buy or sell. Then we got the American League East report. Mo, over your phone calls at 410-583-1057. Ryan, talk to Ryan O'Hearn. Battle of Ryans. One's going to the All-Star game. One's sitting here trying to calm us down, but give us the truth as well.
Hi, I'm Darina, co-founder of Open Phone. My dad is a business owner, and growing up, he always kept his ringtone super loud so he'd never miss a customer call. Open Phone gives your team business phone numbers to call and text all in one shared workspace, and our AI agent answers 24/7 so you never miss a customer. Over 60,000 businesses use Open Phone. Get 20% off at openphone.com/odyssey. Open Phone. No missed calls, no missed customers.
Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken, quick draw. Orioles and Marlins start the final series before the All-Star break, giving away Hawaiian shirts tomorrow. I believe there's fireworks tonight, so it's going to be a big festive weekend. Marlins aren't that bad, so don't sleep on them for sure. Dean Kramer on the hill. Orioles sweep the Mets, so they're back, I guess. I don't know. Joining us now to talk about that from the Baltimore Sun, he's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back to the show Jacob Calvin Meyer. Jacob, what's happening, bud? How are you feeling today?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
All right. The trade of Baker, I guess, indicates, and I think Mike Elias himself even admitted, that this could be a leaning towards not a full-on sell, rebuild, 2000 Orioles style, but, you know, 2018, some familiar names getting jettisoned. But Baker moving, how surprised were you that his name was like the first to go, given the controllable years and the success he's had this season?
Yeah, it's funny. In late May, I did a story about listing the Orioles players who could conceivably be traded. And I originally put Brian Baker on the list, but then I went and saw that he had 3 controllable years. And I was like, that doesn't seem likely to me that they would trade a guy like that. But it looks to be, and Mike Elias was pretty honest with us yesterday when he spoke, that this was an offer that he and his front office deemed too good to turn down. Braves were pretty aggressive in going after Brian Baker, a guy that they clearly like and think that can be in their bullpen for the next few years. And honestly, even if Brian Baker is as good as he's been this year for the next 3 years for Tampa Bay, which, to be honest, is a good but not great relief pitcher. I think you could even make a strong argument that the pick that the Orioles got is even worth that pitcher. And that's not including the fact that Baker has no more minor league options. He was in AAA last season, and it is conceivable that he is not as good as he's been for the past 3 months, you know, that he's not that good for the next 3 years. So in that way, I think the trade makes makes a lot of sense for the organization, especially considering the leanings that they do and how much they lean on the draft. At the same time, you know, Elias also kind of addressed the elephant in the room with the fact that they are probably leaning towards being sellers at the deadline. He admitted basically that if their record was the inverse of what it was going into yesterday, so if they were 50-40, would he have made this trade? Probably not. But at the same time, he also said that if this team over the next, I believe there's 16 or 17 games until the deadline, if they win the majority, vast majority of those games, could he course correct and change how he approaches the deadline? The answer to that is yes. So I think this Baker trade does not indicate that there's going to be a bunch of trades in the next week or so, but it does say that if this team doesn't get really hot in the next few weeks, that they are going to be sellers.
Yeah, Jacob, I mean, it definitely feels like something's going to happen. And if they only buy, it's buying for a guy that's under team control for years to come, right? Like, if you're looking for me, it's a starting pitcher, because it doesn't make sense in any other way to go out and get another big bat. In my opinion, right? It's starting pitching and team control and all of that. But the other side of this, and I'm curious, you know, until Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez hopefully are back, and Tyler Wells, they don't have a lot of depth in the starting pitching department. And they already have Zach Eflin, obviously, on the shelf. Am I crazy to think that I could see them moving a couple more bullpen arms not named Felix Bautista? Because I don't think... I would be shocked. But like Sir Anthony Dominguez, right? I think is a guy that a lot of teams would be interested in. And Soto. And I feel like the Orioles have done a better job of having players fill that void. I just don't know if they'll have starting pitchers that they would feel comfortable calling up if, say, they move Sagano and a Morton or an Eflin, so to speak.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track there. You know, it's always hard to look at one trade or one press conference that Michael Elias gives and say, you know, here's what we learned, that we learned anything new. There's two things that kind of thoughts that I had in my head before yesterday that I sort of believe were strengthened a little bit by what we learned yesterday. And the first is kind of what you said about the relievers. Listen, if this team wins every game between now and July 31st, they're not going to sell. But let's just assume that they are going to be at least moderate sellers at the deadline. I think it is fair to assume that Sir Anthony Dominguez and Gregory Soto and maybe even Andrew Kittredge, that those guys are very, very likely to be traded because of what you stated, that it is more likely to be able to get guys up that can replace them in the bullpen in the short term. And you know, in those guys' case, especially Dominguez and Soto, their free agents at the end of the year, Dominguez has really turned himself into a dominant platoon neutral reliever, which he really hasn't been in his career on the terms of the platoon neutral side. That could be really valuable for some teams. And as you guys know, every team in contention is probably looking at their bullpen and saying, hey, we could use a lefty that can strike some lefties out. You know, like, so Gregory Soto is somebody that you should be able to get some value from at the deadline as well. So that's the first thing, which is I'm pretty confident they're going to trade those relievers. The second one is I think we need to reshape who could maybe be traded. And there might be some guys that would surprise us. So, you know, just to name, again, just completely throwing it out there because they traded a guy with 3 years of team control. One player is Ramon Urias, right? He's under team control through 2026. I think Ramon Urias is perhaps too valuable to this team to give away. At the same time, if you're a team in contention and you lose your third baseman, you lose your second baseman, or you just want to bolster your infield depth, and they give Mike Elias an offer that they can't turn down from Ramon Urias, that's a guy that could be traded. And then you go down the list, basically anybody outside of the young core, if there's an offer for that player that Mike Elias and Sig Meidel in the front office deems to be of greater value than what that player is going to provide to them, then they're probably going to say yes to it.
Yeah, it is about value, right? They love value. And I know that at a point, though, whoever they make a move for, Jacob, to me, it has to be with the thoughts of they have to still think about winning in the immediate future. If it's not 25, 26, you are expected to contend to win the AL East. That's my, at least, impression. But you said a couple other guys and that could surprise you. One I'm fascinated with, and it's another Ramon. How about Ramon Laureano, who has a club option, which is a great – it's a great value for how he's playing, right? And if I'm a team, that's a sneaky pick that I would think that the Orioles could get a decent return on. Is there another guy like Ramon you just mentioned that maybe you're going to keep an eye on here that the Orioles would listen to offers for that we're not talking about?
Yeah, tons of thoughts about all you just said there. So just one quick one is that, right, they need to compete in 2026. And I think a lot of people, and even me initially, when they got the draft pick for Baker, I look at that and go, well, that helps the 2030 Orioles, not the 2026 Orioles. And while that is still probably, you know, mostly true, at the same time, if you get more talent in your farm system, which they should be able to do in this draft with 7 day-one picks, then it gives you the opportunity to go out and make some trades this offseason or at the deadline next year to help the 2026 team. You know, for example, they traded three 2023 draftees to acquire Zach Eflin at the 24 trade deadline. And so the same thing could happen in this situation. The second point about Laureano is exactly right. However, so that increases what you could get for him at the deadline, right? Because he has that club option. It's like, okay, we can get more for him. Like, for example, who gets more for you? We actually discussed this in my company Slack channel yesterday. It was a little bit of an argument. Who gets more at the deadline? Mullins with 2 months of a Cedric Mullins or a year and a half of Ramon Laureano? Like, I'm not sure. I probably still think Mullins because of the defense and center field and his track record, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, Ramon Laureano could get you something legitimate. You pair Laureano and a reliever together and send them to a team, you could get a legitimate prospect there. At the same time, don't you want Ramon Laureano on this team next year? Don't you need a right-handed bat in the outfield? Don't you need a clubhouse presence on this team next year? And I asked Tony Manzolino this yesterday. Of course, he kind of poo-pooed the premise, which is totally fair. But the question was, if the front office continues to make decisions at the deadline that are seen as hurting not just this year's team, but even next year's team, right? If they trade Ramon Arias, if they trade Ramon Laureano, if they trade Andrew Kittredge, who has a team option for next year, if they trade other guys who, Ryan Mountcastle, if he comes back healthy before the end of the month and they trade him, if they trade those guys, how does this clubhouse handle that? How do they view that? Because, of course, Mike Elias said that this is not going to be another rebuild, and nobody thought that it was. However, I think they're looking at this. The players could look at this and say, hey, I understand we didn't play well enough, you know, in the first half of the season to warrant being buyers, and it makes sense that we're going to sell some of our guys on expiring contracts. But if this gets deeper than that and this becomes more of a protracted thing, I'm really curious how some guys in the clubhouse are going to take that. If you trade away a popular player, Ramon Laureano, who I believe leads the team in OPS at the moment, and he could have been a big part for your team next year, and then he's gone.
Jacob Kalbenmeier, Baltimore Sun, joining us here. Ripping it with Ryan, Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken, Nolan McGraw. Jacob, appreciate the time. Have fun with the Marlins series this weekend. Enjoy the All-Star break, and we'll catch up with you in the second half.
Thanks, guys. We got Stowers versus Trevor Rogers tomorrow. That's going to be a blast.
0-3 with 2 Ks. There we go. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Hey, thank you, Jacob. Yeah, Trevor Rogers. There's a fascinating guy that we'll talk about. Talk about 26 and beyond. Now he's become a very important part of the Orioles' future. Not going to be part of the past like we all wanted him to be just a month ago.
Are you buying?
Straight cash, homie.
Or selling?
I'm not gonna buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Ripping it with Ryan. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken, Nolan McGraw, other side of the glass. Got a lot of stuff coming up in the final hour of the program. More Orioles talk. What should they do? Got Ryan O'Hearn. Talk to Ryan Ripken today. We'll get into that. Like, if the Orioles traded him, then tried to re-sign him, would he be cool with that? Well, we'll get his thoughts on that one. So stick around. But right now, let's talk about the sports subjects of the day. We'll count the dough next week.
Right.
How's that sound?
Stick with what we know. That's what I like to say.
And well, I know nothing.
What we do, we know Orioles, or we pretend to. A big series this weekend. Marlins coming to town. One last series before the All-Star break. And that means it's also a chance for Kyle Stowers to do some damage against his former team. We'll have to wait and see if the much-anticipated cinematic dream matchup of Stowers versus Rogers comes true tomorrow. It is a lefty-lefty matchup. I'm not sure if the Marlins are like the Orioles, where they're adverse to playing lefties against left-handed pitching. But for our entertainment's sake, I hope he's in the lineup.
Well, he's hitting 300 against lefties this year.
Okay, well, I guess that answers that question.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Stowers' career numbers at Camden Yards, brief, but numbers nonetheless. 247 average, 3 homers, 15 RBIs. Buy or sell, Ryan, Stowers will go yard against his former team at some point this weekend.
I'm buying it. There, it's something about facing your old team. It's either going to be he's going deep once or twice, or he ain't getting to hit the whole series. Like, that's how it is in these moments. And Stowie, though, by the way, and I had him on my show, the Ryan Ripken Show, in the past. He's been my teammate in the past in 2021. One of the most genuine guys. And he loves Baltimore. He wanted to be here. Genuinely wanted to be here. A lot of his best friends are on that team. Now, having said that, though, I think he's going to make a point here, an all-star point, that he's going to maybe leave the yard twice this weekend. Nolan, that's my bold prediction.
Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't force your hand there.
Well,
that was all
whammy.
It's all you.
Take it to the bank, Nolan McGraw.
How about a little NBA here? The Suns, they're changing their roster slightly. Kevin Durant's out of town. They're expected to move on from Bradley Beal, but they are not giving up or willing to move on from Devin Booker. In fact, they view him so highly that they just gave him an insane financial commitment, $145 million extension over 2 years. In terms of annual value, that is the most valuable contract in NBA history, one-upping what SGA just signed a few weeks ago. NBA writer Sam Quinn calls it a desperate overpay for a directionless team. He questions Booker's true star power or status as a real star player in the league in general. Bob, are you buying or selling this as a foolish move on Phoenix's part?
Buying it 100% because he'll be playing for another team in 3 years. And he's not SGA, even though they're both Kentucky alums, of course. But SGA, transcendent guy. He put up Jordan-like numbers in multiple different categories this year. Booker's a big scorer. We know that. But the Suns were in the NBA Finals just, 3 years ago when they lost to Milwaukee? And both teams have kind of lost their way. But since Ishbia took over, you talk about a guy that's meddling as an owner. I mean, if you're a head coach in Phoenix, don't send your dry cleaning out because you might be fired by the time it's done.
We got time for one more topic here in Major League Baseball. There's a new flame-throwing young pitcher in town. His name is Jacob Mizorowski. You can just call him Miz for short. Got a fastball sitting at 99 miles per hour, 94 mile per hour is on the slider. And the K's, well, they've been coming early and often for him in his first taste of Major League Baseball action. Just the other night, struck out 12 Dodgers batters, raising his total to 33 in 5 starts this year. That's 11.6 strikeouts per 9. Pretty much on par with what Paul Skeens did last year in his incredible rookie year, 11.5 strikeouts per 9 for him. Now, late jump this year, that's going to prevent him from matching Skeens' total numbers. But Ryan, are you buying or selling his K rate will end up being higher at the end of the year than Skeens was last year?
I'm going to sell that part just because, as great as it is, that's still a tough hill to climb. And he's got great stuff, by the way. I mean, it is. You watch it, and I'm still trying to understand exactly when I heard, oh, it's a 96, 97 mile an hour slider. I'm like, well, that's got to be a cutter, right? It's got to be something. But it doesn't move exactly like a cutter either, right? Spectacular talent. I just wonder, as he continues to learn here at the big league level, you know, are guys going to make adjustments? And I just hold Paul Skeens in such a high category where he already had everything kind of figured out and he really didn't have any bumps in the road. I think that Miz might have a couple bumps in the road, but he's going to be one of the brightest pitching stars moving forward in the game.
What was the name of the guy that won for the Yankees the other night?
Oh, come on now. Future Cy Young?
No, okay. I'm not even trying because I'm going to get us an FC.
Schlittler. But you know, you know what's funny about Mizorowski is just watching
him. They say that.
Right, well, go ahead, try it.
Mizorowski.
Oh,
there
very
he is,
good.
Right or there.
Mike Wazowski. No,
Mike Wazowski.
Watching him pitch, his stature, I mean, he's extremely tall, but he's extremely thin. I mean, he reminds you of a young Chris Sale a little bit. But watching these guys pitch, all right, a Felix Bautista, big dominant presence. I understand where the power comes from with him. But these scrawny guys cocking back and throwing 100 miles per hour, they're freaks. Freaks them. I don't get it.
Well, that was all Tim Lincecum back in the day.
Yeah, him too.
I don't know if he pumped 100, though. Did he? Lincecum?
Well, how tall was he?
He was a little teeny tiny guy. Yeah, he had big hair.
Well, Sale and Mizorowski are like 6'6".
Yeah.
But under 200.
Yeah, and the mountains guy, by the time the ball leaves his hand, it's like he could grab your helmet. I mean, he's coming off that mound with that immense size. Well, we come back, talk more about the Orioles, the Mets series in the rearview mirror, which was a win. They swept that doubleheader. Yeah, I got a bunch of tags. They should have swept the series. Well, they didn't. But they did win 2 out of 3. And coming from behind in game one to do so, you want to think like Mike Elias. Think with us at 410-583-1057. Ryan Ripken, we're ripping it with him. He talked to Ryan O'Hearn, who's the Orioles' all-star representative in 2025. He could be in a pennant race this year, but it might not be in Baltimore. We'll get your American League East report as well. Speaking of the Yankees, boy, they had a miraculous win as they swept the Mariners, which actually helped the Orioles.
Hi, I'm Darina, co-founder of OpenPhone. My dad is a business owner, and growing up, he always kept his ringtone super loud so he'd never miss a customer call. OpenPhone gives your team business phone numbers to call and text all in one shared workspace. And our AI agent answers 24/7, so you never miss a customer. Over 60,000 businesses use OpenPhone. Get 20% off at openphone.com/odyssey. OpenPhone. No missed calls, no missed customers.